thoughts on what the commissioner had to say and everything around the world of hockey. We welcome to the show, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, NBC Sports Network's Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm well. Good morning to you, JR. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre. Sean.
I was going to say Matthew because I talked to him, but I talked to him before I come on. But good morning, Sean.
There
morning.
You go.
That played on your network. What did you think just overall of what the commissioner had to say yesterday?
Well, everything's fluid, just what he was saying. I totally agree with everything he said, as a matter of fact. I mean, the truth of the matter is nobody knows. You've got fluctuations going on in a lot of different marketplaces. Some days it's good, some days it's not so good. Over 700 people died in New York yesterday. There's one where they say, well, the curve's going down. Yeah, the curve's going down, but 700 people died in a day. So, you know, it's really hard to play Nostradamus with this thing and say, yeah, this is exactly when we're going to come back and this is exactly how it's going to play out, because nobody really knows. And one of the things that's becoming apparent, the virus is starting to shift into different parts of the country, which I don't think they were expecting. Albany, Georgia now has become a huge hotspot, which I don't think anybody was expecting. So that's part of the issue, too, is just how mobile this virus has become in a short period of time, even though everybody's practicing quote-unquote social distancing.
For the league office itself, Pierre, this obviously they're living it, right? I mean, the offices are in Manhattan, they're New York people, so it's not like you got something that's located out in the Midwest and no real touch. Like, hey, for Gary Bettman and his entire staff, they're seeing this front and center.
Well, especially Commissioner Bettman and Bill Daly, they both commute from New Jersey, northern New Jersey, into Manhattan, I would imagine, most of the time. And so part of what's gone on now, and this is something that's not getting a lot of play, the state of New Jersey has basically been shut down for 30 days. And so small businesses are closed. It's just schools are closed. It's not as easy as everybody's thinking. And I said this yesterday on Mitch Melnick's show in Montreal. What people don't realize is good portions of the season ticket holders, whether it's for the Islanders, especially when they're with their move to Brooklyn, with the Rangers and with the Devils, a lot of those ticket holders come from the state of New Jersey. They come from Essex County. They come from Monmouth County. They come from Passaic County. They come from Bergen County. And Bergen County in particular has been hit amazingly hard. And that's where a lot of the wealth in northern New Jersey comes from, for people that are the season ticket holders and just buying the $350 to $400 tickets at Madison Square Garden. So, again, that's something I'm sure they're thinking about as we go along here.
Simmer has raised the concept of if there is a return to play, whether it be regular season games or right into the playoffs, of, you know, you talked about the economic hit that's hit the average fan, the corporations for sure, but the average fan even more so, and the reliance on the gate tickets to games being huge with the National Hockey League. Would you look at either discounted tickets or even free tickets just to get, if fans are allowed in the stands? That's a huge part of it, obviously. But is that option on the table, do you think?
I don't know. And it's tough for me to say. I thought about giving a thank you to the fans for staying loyal when they come back, and they will come back at some point. But saying here's 50% off on a ticket, I brought that up a couple weeks ago. Just think, again, no inside knowledge. Nobody's told me that. That's just out of my own mind. But I know that people around the league don't like to discount tickets. They don't like to give away free tickets. They don't like setting that precedent. I completely understand their business model. Sean knows it. I know we've had to put budgets together, and a good portion of revenue that comes into the league is not so much from TV money. It's from gate receipts. It's real fannies in the seats. Most of the owners, it's a break-even proposition until you get to the playoffs. And then the playoffs becomes a whole different entity for the ownership groups of these teams.
Based on the way Jeremy Jacobs runs the Boston Bruins, is that a tone, as he's the most powerful man of the ownership group, that sets the tone for the rest of the National Hockey League?
I don't know if it's fair to say that, because there are other owners that are not nearly as famous, and he owns an original six team. I would say you could probably talk about that back in the day when Mr. Jacobs and Mr. Schneider in Philadelphia were very, very large voices in the league, but there have been a lot of accomplished people that have come into the league that do have significant voice when it comes to swaying opinion with the Board of Governors and with legal management, whether it be Commissioner Bettman or Bill Daly. So just to say that it's all on Mr. Jacobs, I think, would be unfair, Sean.
Who are some of the kind of those new voices that you're referring to?
Craig Leopold in Minnesota is a very large voice. Mr. Anschutz and his group out in Los Angeles have a pretty significant voice. Dr. Sam Welly and his family in Anaheim. The people in San Jose. I think Mr. Vinnick down in Tampa has a pretty significant voice. Mr. Dolan in New York. You know, he controls a very large franchise in a major metropolis. So those are some of the people. Some of them are new. Some of them aren't. But Mr. Leopold has been somebody that I know has been counted on a lot when it comes to collective bargaining and a lot of the other things around the league.
Hey, economics are economics. A lot of these wealthy owners are taking major hits. Would we be shocked? And I won't say NHL, but professional sports. We'll see some franchises up for sale after this.
You know, I've been asked that question before, Sean. I just don't know the answer to it. I don't know what the bank's appetite is to loan money to sports teams at this point. It's beyond me. I just don't know. I'm watching what's going on around me. Just in our small little town, we have over 100 people that are infected, and we've got 10 people that are dead. So it's just that's something that I haven't even thought about. But, you know, again, I think a lot of it comes, just to put it in perspective, I think a lot of it comes down to what do the banks have in terms of an appetite to loan money to professional sports teams. I just don't know the answer.
All right. Well, we contemplate a return to play at some point. The business of the game continues. The Toronto Maple Leafs announced yesterday that they have signed KHLer Alexander Barabanov to a one-year deal. He's 25 years old, a winger. Uh-huh. Who had a better year 2 years ago than last year, but has got a little bit of offensive touch. You saw him play at the Olympics.
He
played for Russia and the gold medal winning team in 2018. What do you know of this player and what he might bring to the NHL?
He's an offensive guy. I don't know how much he's going to bring to the NHL. Obviously, he's a bit older. He's got some veteran experience. He's developed physically. He's not overly large, but he can score points. I mean, that's the one thing. He can score points, and that's something I'm sure Toronto's looking to do. Is to add some people in their organization that can score. He didn't score a lot in the Olympics when I was there, but again, he stood out. He's strong with the puck. He's strong on the puck, and he has very good peripheral vision and can make plays. So that's how I would view him.
He's, what, an 11 to 15 goal scorer in the KHL, and numbers really aren't that great, Pierre.
Yeah.
To this, are we seeing a trend away from where I'd say 8 years ago the only players playing in the NHL were the high-end skilled players? Go back to the New Jersey teams back in the day, and they'd have some lower end. Is this a trend where teams will bring guys in to play in the bottom six now, and also a sign that the Russian players, even the role players, want to come back to North America?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're raising a really good point. Absolutely. I think people are also looking for more and more mature physical players. Not so much that they're physical and bound people into the glass like Mike Peluso used to do, or Randy McKay used to do, or Bobby Hulick used to do. You talk about New Jersey with the crash line.
And I was thinking of Sergei Brelin, actually.
Yeah, well, Sergei was a draft pick, though, and he was a guy that was really hockey strong, and they really appreciated his hockey sense. I know Jacques Lemaire thought the world of Sergei Brelin, and his teammates did as well, and I believe Sergei's still working for the Devils in terms of skill development. So, I get your point on that, too. But, no, I think they're looking for guys that are hockey strong, that are a little bit more mature and won't be intimidated playing in big moments. And, you know, obviously, Barabanov played in the Olympics, even though he didn't have a great Olympics. He stood out. You noticed him at the Olympics. You definitely noticed him.
In relation to Mikheyev, who, the soup man, who had a great start to Toronto, unfortunately ended up getting that cut wrist and missed the second half of the season, but he was a right off the radar player who looked really good. Do you have is Barabanov a better player? Not as good? Are they
different.
The same?
No, they're different.
Yeah.
Barabanov's stronger on the puck, and I think he makes, you know, really solid professional plays. Mikheyev is just a tremendous skater. He's got really good range, and so what really stands out is it's explosive ability to make plays. I don't think Barabanov has that.
Hmm. And free players are free players, Pierre, but especially in the case of Toronto up against the salary cap, are we just going to see flat out more and more of these guys on entry-level contracts rotating into the lineup just so they can actually get 18 skaters on the ice?
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. I totally agree with you on that, Sean. And one of the things is we're going to see younger and younger guys coming into the league too because they don't make as much, and the cap is going down. There's no way around it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. The cap is going down. So this is there's going to be a lot of juggling going on. I don't know whether they have to make some internal arrangements in the league, but this is going to be very, very interesting to watch how this all plays out with the salary cap and the players that are signed and the players that potentially could be unrestricted free agents and the players like Barabanov who are coming over from Europe. This is an interesting time in the league to be a manager for sure.
Well, the NHL playoffs were supposed to start tonight, believe it or not. It was 4 weeks ago today, to the day that the Ottawa Senators and the LA Kings played what was the last game for now of the season. DJ Smith is going to be the first Ottawa Senator, not play. They've had some players interviewed, but the first management slash coaching person. He's going to talk a little later on today, have a meet up with the local media in terms of a conference call. And then be on the station as well. Going forward, the Sens next year, if they graduate some players from Belleville, maybe one or both of the top picks end up making the team. How much do you think that DJ Smith needs to or has to change in terms of his coaching philosophy, going from a team that isn't skill laden to maybe will have a lot more skill coming sooner rather than later?
I actually like what Ottawa did this year. I thought they competed hard. You know, at the beginning of the year, they definitely needed to fix their end zone coverage. I think everybody knew that. And eventually it got better as the season went along. Obviously, they didn't have a lot of assets, but I loved what Jack Capuano and Davis Payne did with the team. I thought the goaltending was solid. Pierre Grew did a good job with their goaltenders, but the one thing I'd say is that, you know, I don't think they need to change much. I just think the biggest thing is get out of the gate, quickly. Don't sit back and struggle. You can't fall behind early. When you have a young team, you want to make sure that the message is received properly early on and the team's ready to, you know, play with some confidence as you go along. But I kind of liked what they did as a coaching staff, to be honest with you. They didn't have a lot to work with this year.
From the year in Belleville to where they finished, to San Jose finishing, to the end of a regular season possibly, to a downturn in the salary cap and having 3,000 picks in this year's draft, could this have been a better year for the Ottawa Senators? Quite so. If you looked into the crystal ball from 2 years from now, like they have to be, if they did this properly now, even more so, in one of the best positions in the entire National Hockey League.
I would totally agree with that. I think the Los Angeles Kings are another team that's very similar to that, where they've got a lot of prospects that people aren't talking about. I think Tampa's another one. Even though they've got a real good team, they've got, you know, a plethora of prospects. The New York Rangers. If you're going to talk about, you know, this kind of a terrible situation that's happened to everybody in society, not just the NHL, is there a silver lining for some teams more than others? Absolutely. Is Ottawa one of them? Yeah, they might be right at the top for sure.
We have heard, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to look at the prospects, that maybe just one or two of them, certainly Lafreniere, maybe the German kid Stützle, might be the only two players.
Byfield.
You think Byfield can play in the NHL next season?
He's got the size and the skating ability. Now it just comes down to whether he can make a team or not.
Right. Would it be in his best interest necessarily to play in the NHL?
No, it would not, but it goes back to Sean's point, which I think is a really relevant point, especially going into next year, JR, with the way the cap potentially could be. I think there's going to be an appetite to maybe put some younger players into situations, even though it's not always appropriate to do that. It might be just teams have to do that. If they want to keep a superstar, they may have to let a lesser light go and bring in a younger player. We'll see how it all plays out. Obviously, we don't know what the cap's going to be next year.
Right.
I was going to say, looking at Ottawa sitting in those picks, when you mentioned Tampa Bay, I go over every restricted free agent, and you look at a guy like Cirelli, and if the thing comes down, there's no chance that the Tampa Bay Lightning, he would go into the office right now and say, I'm not taking a dollar less than Colin White. I'm actually a better player.
No, but everything you're saying is right, and that's why I talk about Tampa. People don't realize 3 years ago, nobody even knew who Anthony Cirelli was. Unless you were his father or part of the Anthony Cirelli family group, you didn't know who he was. But again, there are a lot of players that are like that out there that don't get nearly enough acclaim, and all of a sudden they get into the league, and then they turn out to be really, really good players because they don't get the pomp and circumstance that a lot of the first and second rounders get.
Boy, the Ottawa Senators could be in a real position. You know, we talk about the cap coming down and teams facing a cap crunch. They could be in a real power position
We've been talking, not to say anything, but we've been talking about this for a while now. Sean's been talking about it, I've been talking about it, you've been talking about it. I mean, hopefully the listeners are really excited about their group. I understand there were some pain and trials and tribulations this year, but the long term, I think New York Rangers and Ottawa are two teams that are really poised to surge. Where, you know, they might not be they are not playoff teams right now, but if you look at it long term, they could be very dominant teams.
Be a fun exercise, and maybe, well, we're looking for stuff to kind of get us through each show. Fun exercise to go through some of these teams that are in a cap crunch, like the Lightnings and the Toronto Maple Leafs of the world, and look at players they may not be able to keep just based on the new world we're going to be living in.
And, you know, Sean's point about Cirelli is a good one, because there are going to be players like that. You can go look at the list of all these teams that have RFAs. And there are going to be guys that are going to be like that. It comes down to your professional scouting and how they read players. Because there will be some guys that will be available that you'll say, wow, that guy's actually really good.
Yeah. Speaking of really good players, before we wrap, a couple of questions for you to wrap up. Victor Arvidsson celebrating a birthday today. Wow. We kind of went through. He had a real down year this year production-wise, and I know he had some injuries, but only 15 goals in 57 games, I think it was. He's coming off a couple of 30-goal seasons, including 34 last year. Yeah. His shooting percentage last year, Pierre, was kind of off the charts. He was regressed to a normal shooting percentage this year, so his shot total was way down. What did you see in his game when he was playing that he wasn't quite as effective a player as he had been in years past?
Part of it was the center iceman that he played with most of the year. Ryan Johansson wasn't as good. They were trying to figure out who was better to play with him, Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson. Philip Forsberg had a down year. Usually that was a line, Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. They weren't able to get any kind of real mojo or traction going the entire year. I did a lot of Nashville games. But the cross-check from Robert Bortuzzo, I don't think he was ever right after that, even though he came back and played. I mean, and Robert's a friend of mine, and I think a very, you know, useful player, but that was nasty. That was really nasty, and I think that set that player back a long way.
Would you say that Arvidsson's contract is maybe the best value contract in the NHL at $4.25 million for four more seasons?
Yeah, it's up there as long as he can get back to being the productive player that he was the previous 2 years, and I think he can be. He's got an amazing nose for the net, and he's fearless. The problem is there's a little bit of the Brendan Gallagher syndrome. He's not overly large. So at some point, when those players lose a gear or half a gear, their hands start to go. They're not nearly as effective, but I can't think that will be a problem for him.
We had a fun discussion about draft timing, and I said, it'd be nice to get the draft lottery, do a little June draft. And I was thinking, just again, as we have this conversation from an Ottawa perspective, would you agree that Dorion and JR said wait till after the playoffs end? If you're Dorion sitting on all those picks, I'm assuming you want a draft at the conclusion of the season, because the restricted free agents would be moved for the actual draft picks versus necessarily picks you took, right? Like, team always wants to pick their own player, to my
Absolutely,
point.
And I got to let you go. On that question, great point, and it's got a lot of merit. Let's talk about it tomorrow.
Will do. Thanks, Pierre.
Take care.